is the news.
Iran's foreign minister warns against the Israeli presence in the Caucasus region as he meets with his Turkish counterpart in Ankara. The battle for Bakhmut rages. Russian forces say that they have taken control of the entire eastern part of the Ukrainian city. And Beijing expresses concerns about a planned meeting between the president of Taiwan and the U.S. House Speaker. Thanks for joining us. Iran's foreign minister is on a trip to Turkey. During a joint press conference with his Turkish counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian warned against the Israeli presence in the Caucasus region, calling it a serious threat to regional peace and stability.
One of the consequences of the crisis in the Caucasus has been that the Israeli regime has gained a footstep in that region, and we regard the presence of the Israeli regime as a source of insecurity. Wherever the Israeli regime has been present, the result has been only insecurity and crisis. Iran warns all sides to actually be vigilant in the face of the Israeli regime's behavior and not allow the Israeli regime to gain a foothold in the Caucasus and other regions.
Amir Abdullahian also extended his condolences to the people and the government of Turkey over a devastating earthquake that hit the country last month. During their meeting, Amir Abdullahian and Mevlut Çavuşoğlu discussed international and regional developments, as well as bilateral relations. Trade, customs, and transportation, as well as fighting terrorism, were other issues of discussions. The top Iranian diplomat said Tehran insists on cooperation rather than competition between regional countries. Çavuşoğlu, for his part, thanked Iran's quick response in sending aid to Turkey following the earthquake. He said that he will travel to Iran in the near future. Palestinians have held a funeral procession in Nablus to mourn the death of a 49-year-old man who was killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian, identified as Fatah Hussein Kharusha, a member of the Hamas resistance movement, was killed in a Jenin refugee camp on Tuesday. He was one of the six Palestinians who were killed in Jenin. Funerals were also held for five other slain Palestinians. The Gaza-based resistance movement Hamas has hailed its fallen members as heroes. Also, businesses in cities including Jenin, Nablus, and Ramallah stayed closed in protest against the Jenin raid. Early on Tuesday, Jenin also witnessed settler violence that was backed by the Israeli military. The incursion left hundreds of Palestinians injured. As the Israeli regime subjects Palestinian prisoners to most extreme human rights violations, Palestinians in Gaza take to the streets to express anger at the regime's repressive measures. Our correspondent Ola Al-Assi reports from Gaza.
Tens of Palestinians took to the streets after prayer, expressing their support with the Palestinian prisoners and Israeli jails against the repressive measures and policies initiated by the far-right Israeli Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir. Thousands of Palestinian political prisoners in Israeli prisons continue for the 22nd day of collective disobedience measures in response to the ongoing repression campaign. Islamic Jihad movement has affirmed its support for the Palestinian prisoners' civil disobedience actions in the face of the Israeli fanatic measures, stressing that the prisoners will never be abandoned.
We declare in the Islamic Jihad that we stand with the Palestinian prisoners and support their civil disobedience actions. And even if the measures escalated to an open-ended hunger strike, we will support them and ready for all the possibilities. We will never abandon them.
On top of these measures is the approval of a draft bill that would authorize the execution of the Palestinian detainees that have performed anti-occupation operations. The campaign is expected to culminate on the first day of the operation. upcoming holy fasting month of Ramadan, with a full-scale hunger strike bearing the banner of Freedom or Martyrdom. Palestinian prisoners' father expressed his concerns over the hunger strike step, calling for the international organizations to support the prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners' families live in stress over the lives of their sons and daughters in Israeli jails, as hunger strike is the most difficult thing a prisoner can endure, and it threatens their lives.
Palestinians chanted slogans against the far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir and called for the immediate halt of the repressive measures.
Our prisoners' cause is a just one, and we support them in everything they take against the Israeli measures. We call on the world to support the Palestinian prisoners and put pressure on the Zionist occupation to stop passing the law and stop repressive measures against prisoners and detainees.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip stressed that Israel's hostile policies will never stop them from exercising the right to resist the regime and its settlers. Al-Asi, Gaza.
South Africa's parliament has voted in favor of downgrading diplomatic relations with Israel in the wake of the regime's ongoing crimes against Palestinians. To discuss that further, we were joined by our guests earlier in the News Review program.
On this segment of the program, South Africa's parliament has voted to downgrade diplomatic relations with Israel, citing the regime's violation of Palestinians' rights. The National Freedom Party introduced a draft resolution that said Israel was created through the displacement, murder, and maiming of Palestinians. It said the regime instituted apartheid to control and manage Palestinians to maintain its grip on power. South Africa's relations with Israel have been tense in recent years. The recent decision comes as more than 70 Palestinians have been killed by regime forces in the West Bank alone. So far this year, the regime also goes ahead with its settlement expansion in the occupied land and keeps its blockade of the Gaza Strip. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas, who's joining us from London. Also, we have Jafar Amini, Palestinian writer and political analyst, joining us from Perth. Mr. Amini, I want to get your perspective on the significance of this and also whether this could be setting a precedent for maybe other countries to follow suit.
I would like to remind the South African parliament and the South African people and the South African continent as a whole what the late Mandela said. He said, and I quote, "Our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians." So how come the people who came after Mr. Mandela decided to have relations with a country like Israel? Two, the late Desmond Tutu, on a visit to Palestine, he said the following, and I quote, he said that what I have witnessed in Israel, Palestine, is worse than what we had in South Africa. So again, I ask the question, how come a country like South Africa that suffered from apartheid and discrimination and theft of resources like we, the Palestinians, are suffering, would have relationship with a country like Israel? Plus, we, the Palestinians, as represented by the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, have always had a very good and close, supportive relationship with South Africa when they were under apartheid, and we tried to help them. So all this is rhetoric, as far as I'm concerned. If they want to do something tangible, they sever any relationship with Israel, and they follow suit of what happened only 2 weeks ago at the African Congress when the Algerian delegation evicted the Israeli observers. What are they doing in Africa? They are not an African nation. They are not even a Middle Eastern nation. They are occupiers. They are an apartheid regime. And as of last week, Mr. Smotrich, who is member of the new fascist government, declared open genocide on Palestine when he said, and I quote, the entire village of Hawara should be wiped out of the map. This is a 6,000 people village. And he went on to say that the government of Israel should do this and should not leave it to the citizen to do this. On top of that, there was a video clip that I received from Palestine showing Israeli soldiers, the occupation forces, dancing with the settlers. So how could you have any dealings with a country like this?
Right. We're going to have to wrap up the program shortly. Said Mohsen Abbas, we're just going to give you a little bit of time to wrap up, please.
Essentially, the thing that seems to be emerging now is that Africa is coming to its traditional position on Israel, whose charm offensive, one hopes, is going to fail, because all that will ultimately lead African nations towards is really accepting the injustices and the apartheid system of Africa. And really what Israel wants is access to African economic resources. They want to plant terrorism, as they do in many places in West Asia, and they want to support the Western Zionist money mafia's agendas in Africa. So Africa needs to be very careful about relations with Israel in general. But what's emerged from the African Union in the last couple of weeks at the recent meeting was an interesting draft declaration in which they expressed full support for Palestinian people in their legitimate struggle against the Israeli occupation. And they, on top of that, decried the increasing illegal settlements and Israeli intransigence. But most importantly, they said they want and urge their nations to end all direct and indirect trade, scientific and cultural exchanges with Israel, and to dismantle and prohibit the Israeli system of colonialism and apartheid. That's okay. Statement. Whether or not all the African nations can come on board with that in a genuine way remains to be seen. But what is clear, as I perhaps you may picked up or didn't pick up in my initial comment, that even in Amnesty International, when Western biased human rights organizations like Amnesty International even come out and call Israel essentially a nation that discriminates, dispossesses, dominates, and represses.
Okay.
Any kind of legitimate dissent by killing and injuring is essentially a state which is an apartheid one. And I don't think that South Africa or any African nation can really tolerate such a situation.
All right, that's all the time we have for this program. Allow me to thank my guests, journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas, joining us from the British capital, London, and thanks to Palestinian writer and political analyst Jeff Aramini, joining us from Perth. And with that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review.
Russia has taken control of the entire eastern part of the flashpoint Ukrainian town of Bakhmut. That's according to the head of the Wagner Group, a Russian private military force fighting in Ukraine. Yevgeny Prigozhin said the only area left to capture is the river, which bisects the town. Russian and Ukrainian forces have been locked in a fierce battle in Bakhmut over the past few weeks. Kiev has repeatedly asked for more Western ammunition and military equipment to defend its positions in the current epicenter of the war. Capturing Bakhmut would be a strategic gain for Russia, as it would enable it to seize the rest of the Donbas region. Earlier, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned against the fall of the town, saying that it would create a, quote, open road from Moscow into eastern Ukraine. China says it is deeply concerned about the Taiwanese president's plan to meet the U.S. House Speaker in Washington. The foreign ministry spokesperson said that Beijing is firmly opposed to any form of official exchanges between Taiwan and the U.S. Liao Ning said no one should underestimate China's steadfast pledge to support its national sovereignty and territorial integrity. Earlier, the U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy confirmed that he will be meeting Tsai Ing-wen in Washington. McCarthy added he does not have any plans to visit Taipei afterwards, but he said that China cannot determine where he can go to. It's the second time Taiwan's president will be meeting with such a high-ranking American official. The former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan in August of last year that prompted a strong response by China, which staged military exercises around the island. The UN Rights Chief has slammed the British draft law that prohibits illegal asylum seekers from applying for UK citizenship. Volker Turk said the draft law would allow British authorities to detain and to remove those who attempt to enter the UK by crossing the channel on small boats. He said the bill is in contrast with the UK's obligations under international human rights and refugee law. Turk added, regardless of their migration status or mode of arrival, all people who seek safety and dignity abroad are entitled to the full respect of their human rights. Britain's Conservative government intends to outlaw all illegal arrivals and transfer them to countries like Rwanda. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The continuing war in Ukraine and the provision of arms by major American arms manufacturers to Kiev is continuing to prolong the war and put huge amounts of profit into the pockets of American arms companies. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The New York Times has covered this story and tells us more. The United States has announced plans to send another shipment of military equipment to Ukraine, comprised mainly of munitions worth about $400 million. Two officials and a third person familiar with the decision, which was announced on Friday, 3rd of March, said the new U.S. military aid shipment to Ukraine will mainly be consisting of guided multiple launch rockets for HIMARS launchers, ammunition for the Bradley fighting vehicles, and armored vehicle launch bridges. The news source confirmed on Thursday, 2nd of March, that the funds for the new military shipment to Ukraine were provided once more by using the Presidential Drawdown Authority, or PDA, by which the President of the United States can legally authorize the shipment of military equipment and services from U.S. stocks without gaining congressional approval in response to an emergency. In this regard, White House spokesperson John Kirby told reporters at an earlier news briefing that he preferred not to put a price tag on the new military shipment to Kiev, saying more details about the contents of the shipment and its estimated value would be released shortly. In the meantime, a confirmed classified Pentagon report revealed the United States has been struggling to keep track of the weapons it sent to forces in Ukraine. U.S. Republican lawmakers have voiced concerns about the haphazard military shipments to Ukraine. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene said Washington's military aid to Ukraine was a U.S.-led proxy war against Russia. Marjorie Taylor Greene said the Ukraine war had placed a heavy financial burden on the shoulders of American taxpayers who were already grappling with poverty. However, the lawmaker also admitted that war was a deadly profitable industry for the U.S. government. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. The United States on Friday, 3rd of March, announced a $400 million new military aid package, which includes weapons, munitions, and tactical bridges to move tanks and armored vehicles for Ukraine, deepening its involvement in the war in defiance of repeated warnings by Russia. The bridges could be used by Ukrainian forces that have been training in combined arms maneuver warfare, which is the coordinated use of artillery shelling alongside tank and armored vehicle attack movements in battles with Russian troops since they launched a special operation in Ukraine a year ago. Jack Watling, a senior research fellow for land warfare at the London-based Royal United Services Institute, claimed assault bridging is essential for combined arms operations. It allows armored vehicles to cross narrow rivers and ditches that would otherwise cause a whole force to slow down. Jack Watling added, "Importantly, assault bridges are only critical for offensive operations, showing that the United States is preparing Ukraine to continue the war despite Russia's warnings, which says more U.S. arms aid to Ukraine will only prolong the war." U.S. President Joe Biden has said he expects American aid to Ukraine will continue without interruption, despite opposition by Republicans, who have vowed to use their majority in the House of Representatives to monitor the flow of aid to Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly warned that supplying Kiev with more and more weapons will only exacerbate the conflict, which is now in its 13th month. The Kremlin has said continuously flooding Ukraine with weapons will only drag the conflict out and make it more painful for the Ukrainian side, but it will not change our goals and the end result. Anatoly Antonov, Russia's ambassador to Washington, said recently the U.S. wanted to impose a strategic defeat on Moscow, but would not succeed. Russia's TASS news agency quoted Anatoly Antonov as saying, "All foreign weapons that fall into Ukrainian hands on the battlefield will be ground up and destroyed." The United States has reportedly sent more military assistance to help Ukraine fight against Russia than Washington spent annually to fight its own war in Afghanistan. The data compiled by the German research firm Statista showed that U.S. military aid to Ukraine up to mid-January, covering the first 11 months of the war, totaled $46.6 billion. Citing data from the Kiel Institute for the World Economy, Statista said, compared with an average annual military spending of $43.4 billion in 2022 dollars during the first 10 years of the Afghanistan war. Statista's data journalist Martin Armstrong said, when calculating the average annual costs of previous wars in which the United States has been involved in, the true magnitude of the country's Ukraine aid expenditure can be seen. He said the Ukraine total doesn't include an additional $5 billion worth of weapons and equipment that the Pentagon sent to Kiev. The Foreign Policy magazine has also covered this story and tells us more. The United States approved arms sales to NATO allies increased dramatically in 2022 compared with 2021, as the war between Russia and Ukraine prompted the member states into purchasing more weapons. By some estimates, military spending by the United States and its allies is growing at a level without precedent since the end of the Second World War. The magazine says the number and cash value of arms sales approved by the United States to its NATO allies has nearly doubled in 2022 compared to 2021. According to an analysis of 2 years of data from the U.S. Defense Department's Defense Security Cooperation Agency, in 2021, the U.S. government approved 14 possible major arms sales to NATO allies, worth around $15.5 billion. However, in 2022, that figure jumped to 24 possible major arms sales worth around $28 billion, including $1.24 billion worth of arms sales to prospective NATO member Finland. The sharp uptick in these arms sales reflects a massive shift in Europe's security landscape. This has been the basis for the generation of vast profits for the arms manufacturers, with the U.S. military-industrial complex emerging as the key beneficiary of the war in Ukraine. Despite conditions in which the Dow Jones Industrial Average has fallen by 10% for the year as a whole, the share prices of U.S. defense contractors have actually surged, Over the past 12 months, the share price of Northrop Grumman has increased by 40%, and Raytheon is up nearly 17%, while Lockheed Martin's share price has surged by 37%. Some of the approved U.S. arms sales in 2022 were years in the making, such as Germany's plan to purchase F-35 fighter jets in a deal worth around $8.4 billion. In contrast, many other major arms sales were rushed after the war broke out in Ukraine. European countries on NATO's eastern flank dashed to replenish and fully stock their own military capabilities in an effort to replace the equipment they shipped to Ukraine and deter Moscow. Any opportunity to supply weapons is profitable to the U.S. military-industrial complex. This incentive is enough for perpetuating the war in Ukraine. Lockheed Martin, the United States' largest military contractor, has booked more than $950 million worth of its own missile military orders from the Pentagon, in part to refill stockpiles being sent to Ukraine. The U.S. Army has awarded Raytheon Technologies more than $2 billion in contracts to deliver missile systems to expand or replenish weapons used in the war in Ukraine.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
اولویت‌بندیمون دقیق بشه. اصلا دین اسلام آمده تا به من و شما اولویت‌بندی یاد بده.
Our priorities in life must be precisely according to Islam. The religion of Islam and the concept of velaya also establish some priorities for us. The first and the most important priority in life is the preference of Allah over materialistic world. A person who replaces these two will not reach salvation in this world and the hereafter. One aspect of this understanding is good behavior in both inside and outside the house. If we have Allah in our mind, we must behave the same in both cases. Here by priority we mean which one is more important, Allah or our worldly life. If our priority is Allah, then our behavior with our family members must be as much as better as that of with the people outside the house. Since Allah has ordered us to behave goodly with our family members, our first priority must be this, rather than having good relation with people outside and forget our own family. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
China will boost defense spending by 7.2% this year, slightly outpacing last year's increase and faster than the government's modest economic growth forecast. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Global Times has covered this story and tells us more. China on Sunday, 5th of March, announced a draft budget for 2023, which will see the country's annual defense budget rise to 1.55 trillion yuan, or about $224.7 billion, an increase of 7.2%, remaining single digit for the eighth consecutive year. Analysts say that the figure marks a reasonable and restrained boost amid military spending sprees by many other countries around the world in light of global security tensions. It is part of the country's efforts to meet the need for modernizing its national defense in order to safeguard national sovereignty, territorial integrity, and development interests facing external threats and instabilities. The proposed defense budget growth was made public in a draft budget report issued at the opening of the annual session of the National People's Congress, the NPC, the country's top legislature, on Sunday, 5th of March. It marks that China maintains a single-digit growth for defense budget for the eighth consecutive year since 2016, and a steady increasing pace since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. The growth rate was 6.6% in 2020, 6.8% in 2021, and 7.1% in 2022. Experts say the defense budget boost is reasonable due to the country's military modernization roadmap, the growing security threats in the world, as well as further optimized COVID-19 policies that encourage economic growth, as well as more military diplomatic activities. A 7.2% increase in defense budget means only a 0.1 percentage point higher compared with last year, and it is not high at all, taking China's national defense needs and economic development into account. Song Zhongping, a Chinese military expert and television commentator, told the Global Times. China's gross domestic product, or GDP, growth rate in 2022 was 3%, so the defense budget growth is said to be restrained and reasonable, Song Zhongping said. China has set its gross domestic product growth target at about 5% for 2023, which is significantly higher than the GDP growth rate of 3% in 2022. Reflecting confidence in a nationwide economic recovery after claiming a victory against the COVID-19 epidemic and providing a basis for the defense budget increase. China is aiming to achieve the centenary goals of the People's Liberation Army, the PLA, by 2027. Basically, realize the modernization of national defense and the armed forces by 2035 and fully build the armed forces into a world-class force by the mid-21st century. China's Xinhua News Agency reported on 1st of August last year, which marks the 95th anniversary of the founding of the People's Liberation Army. To meet this roadmap, China needs to gradually increase its defense expenditure over many years, and, in tandem with the country's economic growth, a Beijing-based military expert told the Global Times. National defense modernized development and procurement of new weapons and equipment, the maintaining of a high level of realistic combat-orientated exercises of the troops, as well as the improved welfare to military personnel. In 2023, the People's Liberation Army, the PLA, is expected to commission more advanced warplanes, including the J-20 stealth fighter jets, the J-16 multi-role fighter jets, at a time when the legacy of the J-7 fighter jets are being decommissioned. It's also expected to conduct sea trials for the country's third aircraft carrier, the electromagnetic catapult-equipped Fujian. It is also expected to hold more realistic combat-orientated drills that consume large amounts of costly live munitions and fuels. The significance of national defense modernization has become particularly highlighted due to the deteriorating global security conditions over the past year, including the Russia-Ukraine conflict and a provocative visit by the then Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, to the island of Taiwan. That visit led to a series of unprecedented large-scale military exercises by China encircling the island. The United States and its allies, including Japan, have been making provocative moves over Taiwan in recent months. The U.S. military frequently sends aircraft and aircraft carriers and vessels to conduct close-in reconnaissance missions on China's doorstep, sometimes trespassing into China's territorial waters, particularly in the South China Sea, as well as the Taiwan Straits. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. China will boost defense spending by 7.2% this year, slightly outpacing last year's increase and faster than the government's modest economic growth forecast, as Chinese Premier Li Keqiang called for the armed forces to boost combat preparedness. The national budget released on Sunday, 5th of March, showed 1.55 trillion yuan, about $224.7 billion allocated to military spending. The defense budget will be closely watched by China's neighbors and the United States, who are concerned by Beijing's strategic intentions and developments of its military power. Speaking to the Chinese parliament, the Chinese Premier Li Keqiang said military operations, capacity building, and combat preparedness should be well coordinated in fulfilling major tasks. Our armed forces, with a focus on the goals of the centenary of the People's Liberation Army in 2027, should work to carry out military operations, boost combat preparedness, and enhance military capabilities, he said in the State of the Nation address to the Parliament. This year's hike in defence spending marks the 8th consecutive single-digit increase, as in previous years, no breakdown of the spending was given, only the overall amount and the rate of increase. The spending increase outpaces targeted economic growth of around 5%, which is slightly below last year's target, as the world's second-largest economy faces domestic headwinds. China started a series of military exercises near Taiwan last August to express anger at the visit to Taipei by the then Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi. Li Mingjiang, Associate Professor at South Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore, said defense spending outpacing the economic growth forecast showed that China anticipates facing greater pressures in its external security environment, especially from the United States over the issue of Taiwan. Chinese leaders are clearly intensifying efforts to prepare the country's military to meet all potential security challenges ahead. China, with the world's largest military in terms of personnel, is busy adding a slew of new hardware, including aircraft carriers and stealth fighters, to its military. Beijing says its military spending for defensive purposes is a comparatively low percentage of its gross domestic product, GDP.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, and may I receive with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. During this month of Sha'ban, the month of Almighty Allah's mercy and pleasure, we will try to offer a glance into some of the passages of the whispered prayer of Sha'baniyah, or the so-called Munajat Sha'baniyah. Thank you in advance for staying with us. We'll be back again after listening to some parts of it.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad ilahi لم يكن لي حول فأنتقل به عن معصيتك إلا في وقت أيقظتني لمحبتك وكما أردت أن أكون كنت فشكرتك بإدخالي في كرمك ولتطهير قلبي من أوساخ الغفلة عنك
Dear listeners, previously we were discussing this excerpt of the whispered prayer of Sha'baniyya. إلهي لم يكن لي حول فأنتقل به عن معصيتك إلا في وقت أيقظتني لمحبتك. My Lord, I had no strength to desist from your disobedience. إلا في وقت, except when you أيقظتني لمحبتك. You awakened me because of your love. Regarding the concept of
love of the Almighty Allah, we have discussed throughout the previous episodes, but one or two other aspects remain to be discussed. The first point is that love of Allah is the element that protects man from the punishment. If sins cause a person to fall in the eyes of Allah and expose him to his punishment, the love of Allah protects one from his chastisement. Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn, Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, says in a whispered prayer, "O Allah, my sins have indeed frightened me, but my love of you has given me protection." And this is one of those points that the true lovers of the Almighty Allah shall bear in mind. Now, another aspect that remains to be discussed is those levels of love. Because love is not something that has a fixed set. It is actually a relative term. So we have different levels of love. The hearts of the people are at different levels and stages in relation to the love of the Almighty Allah. This is something that we will discuss after a short break.
Alhamdulillah, we have been given the blessed opportunity of witnessing another month of Sha'ban, which is the month of Allah's mercy and pleasure. Hafaftahu bir rahmati wa ridwan. Allah has covered this month with His pleasure and mercy. I thought it might be good to have a little introduction to Munajat Sha'baniyya. The late Imam Khomeini in many places on several occasions emphasized on this Munajat, and in one of his sayings he said that there are many important mystical points that one can understand from the Quran and whispered prayers of Imams. And then in particular he mentioned Munajat Sha'baniyya, and he said philosophers, mystics may be able to understand some aspects of these whispered prayers. But if someone wants to really understand, must be a person who has himself achieved a high level of closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so that he can have a taste, he can have an experience of what he says. In another place, the late Imam Khomeini said something very important. He said, this Munajat Sha'baniyya is one of the whispered prayers that if someone pays attention to it and follows it and reflects on it, he can reach somewhere. He can achieve some levels of perfection. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this month of forgiveness, and to be pleased with us in this month of pleasure. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless us, our families, our community, all humanity with His pleasure, with His reward, with the coming of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, with forgiveness, with being able to remain always on the right path.
So as we said, as we concluded, the hearts of the people are at different levels of love. When we consider the Almighty Allah and the action and amal based on that. Among the instances of love is a kind of love which is so superficial and weak that it only remains unnoticed even by the lover himself. And yet, among its instances is the kind of love which fills the heart of the person, such that it does not leave any empty space for anything other than the Almighty Allah. Things which people take as amusement and which occupy their time from the remembrance of the Almighty Allah. But this one instance is actually such that it does not leave any empty space in it for these things. But yet, there is another level of love in which one is not satisfied with the remembrance of Allah even, with standing before Him. The thirst of love is not quenched by remembering Him, by remembrance, by invoking Him, by praying to Him, by performing good deeds for His sake. However long his standing and prayer before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala might be, such person whose heart is filled with this kind of love, this person is not quenched. This love is not quenched. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says in a supplication, "O my master, I am hungry of your love, such that I can never feel satisfied. I am thirsty of your love, such that it cannot be quenched. O my yearning for he who sees me, while I am unable to see him." In the whispered prayer of Muftaqirin, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, "Nothing will cool my burning thirst but reaching to you. Nothing will quench my ardor except meeting you. And nothing will damp my yearning but gazing upon your face." So, we have different levels of love. Among the other signs of the love of Allah is that passionate love and burning thirst for Him. The things that are referred to in our traditions as walah. A phrase in Ziyarah of Aminullah says, "O Allah, indeed the hearts of those who surrender to you are full of passionate love." In his Munajat of Al-Dhakirin, Imam Zainul Abidin says, "O Allah, the loving hearts are filled by you. Hearts find no serenity except in remembering you. Souls find no rest except in seeing you." And this is in fact the characteristic of the love-filled hearts, that they do not leave any space for anything else other than the Almighty Allah. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقول لك احبك يا شعبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقول لك احبك يا شعبان والعالم احبك يا شعبان يا شعبان احبك يا شعبان
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kHz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.